Hello and welcome to Diabetes Dialogue, technology, therapeutics, and real-world perspectives. Diabetes Dialogue is a monthly podcast hosted by myself, Diana Isaacs, and Natalie Bellini, providing a regular news roundup of the latest clinically applicable insights across diabetes and metabolic diseases with a focus on leveraging technology to improve care. Produced by HCP Live Endocrinology, the audio version of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives is available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, with a video version available only on hcplive.com. Hello, and welcome to this episode of Diabetes Dialogue, Technology, Therapeutics, and Real-World Perspectives. I am Diana Isaacs, and I'm here with my co-host, Natalie Bellini, and we have a very special episode today where we will discuss all things Medtronic 780G, which got newly FDA approval. And with us to do that, we have Dr. Bob Vigersky, who is the Chief Medical Officer, Global Medical and Clinical Affairs at Medtronic. So welcome, Dr. Vigersky.
Thank you so much. It's really exciting to be here. And please, my friends, and you're my friends, call me Bob. Only my relatives call me Robert. So, even my colleagues, where I spent a lot of time, and I'll mention that later at Walter Reed, in the military, you can't say, call me Bob. They call you sir. Let's be very informal.
All right. Well, thank you. We appreciate that. And can you tell us, I know you've got an impressive background, so can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Sure. So I have had a career that has several phases, and each one of them has been better than the next. Walter Reed mentioned is that I was on active duty in the Army for 27 years. And spent all of it at Walter Reed, which is the flagship hospital for the military. And at Walter Reed, I started a diabetes institute, which did clinical research and developed a patient care model using seven nurse practitioners in primary care clinics. And also, it's part of a university, so a lot of teaching into the fellows and residents at Walter Reed. And during that time, I was president of the Endocrine Society, which really, I'm very proud to have been that in that office for 3 years, a president, the life president, and then past president. A lot of work, but tried to make the people who are members of the Endocrine Society, which is an international organization based in the U.S. with 18,000 members, pay more attention to diabetes. And they actually did. And that was kind of, I'm proud to say, my legacy in that organization. So their congresses and their journals and the meetings are much more focused on diabetes than they ever were starting back when I was president, which is now almost 15 years ago. So 8 years ago, I joined Medtronic. And again, a great milestone for me in my career. It's been an absolutely fabulous, it was a fabulous opportunity for me, working with brilliant people in the top of their game. And of course, bringing from Medtronic to the world, some of the most innovative technologies for treatment of diabetes and Medtronic has always been a first, first CGM, first pump and CGM that have been integrated, first suspending pump that actually did something with the CGM data, first hybrid closed loop, which seems like a lifetime ago, but was only about 6 years ago, and now 780G, which is a quantum leap the system's ability to be a partner with people with diabetes in their diabetes journey, and it has features, and we can talk more about that, that really allows a lot of personalization and without sacrificing the glycemic control that we're all trying to get for our patients. And just one more thing, Diana, I still see patients. I go back to Walter Reed as a Red Cross volunteer, and I go into clinic two or three times a month, and continue to see some of my older patients, not chronologically old, but patients I've been seeing for several decades, and teach the residents and fellows, and help mentor my junior colleagues. And that keeps me grounded in reality of the diabetes challenges that everyone has, both type 1 and type 2. But we're here to really talk about type 1.
That's so awesome, because that's something Natalie and I pride ourselves on, is that like we're in the real world. Like we're seeing patients, we're working with people with diabetes all the time. And it's great to hear that you're still in the trenches. So like, you know what is really going on. Yeah.
Yep.
All right, Natalie, I'm going to turn it to you to get started to talk about all things 780G.
All things 780G, right? So let's just start. Tell us top line. What are you the most excited about with 780G? Where are you going? This is it. This is really going to change things. And there's so many different new parts and new, right? We have a new infusion set. We have missed meal bolus. We have so... Just start talking. Tell us where we are. And we have questions back for you to ask a little bit more clarifying questions around those.
Yeah. I think the most exciting thing about 780G is it's given us the opportunity to rethink diabetes and how we manage diabetes. And when I say we, I'm talking about both the healthcare providers and the people with diabetes. Because it really is designed for real life, and what do I mean by that? People with diabetes have to make 180 decisions a day, and there are 42 factors that are involved in controlling your glucose at any given time, and so this is more than any one person can deal with, and not only that, but it never lets up. It continues incessantly for as long as you have diabetes, for as long as you live. And any system, and this, by the way, Natalie, is a system. It's not just a piece of hardware and software, but it's an entire ecosystem that is intraoperable. So it was all designed to work together. And this system has your back, and when I say has your back, real life intervenes in everyone with type 1 diabetes, and they miss boluses, and they don't count carbs exactly the way we would like them, or they're not expert. In fact, most carb counters are underestimating carbs by about 30%. So they're not getting as much insulin as they should. So what this system, 780 system G, does is it actually allows people to live life as they want to, because they're not having a piece of hardware like this isn't going to stop those things that are happening where you just forgot to give a bolus or you realize it and you gave it late. So this meal detection technology, which is part of 780G, is a mitigation for the things that happen in everyday life. And so it can detect a rise in glucose based on historical data it learns from the patient, and based on the rate of rise, it says, okay, this is a meal. And so it starts to become more aggressive in terms of its insulin delivery. And part of the magic here in 780, as opposed to 670, it does auto corrections. And the auto corrections happen every 5 minutes. And so having auto corrections every 5 minutes really gives flexibility as well as safety because you can go on and off, 12 times an hour as needed. And add to that this meal detection where it can become even more aggressive once it knows that you've had a meal. It actually flattens out the postprandial excursion of your blood sugar and particularly during the day. And then even at night, you need auto corrections. And auto corrections, you say, well, when I'm not eating and, you know, why do you need it even at night? Well, the reason you need it at night is because the blood sugar goes up at various times. We don't know exactly why, but bad dreams and stress from the evening before or a big meal. And so you need auto corrections even during the night. And this is what 780 does.
I have so many questions related to this. I'm so excited.
Before you go on, and let us ask. Great. Here we go. All right.
I just want to make one other point.
Sure.
So what this system does is, from the healthcare provider standpoint, is, I think, a game changer in who we think is eligible to get a system like this. Historically, we've always looked for the ideal patient, and I'm guilty of that because, and maybe not guilty is the right word, but we didn't have the technology like 780G that allowed us to give the technology to people who we wouldn't have given it to before, because we had these barriers. You know, you had to know how to carb count very well. You had to be doing a number of finger sticks per day. You had to have an A1C that wasn't 12 because that was considered, well, you really weren't paying attention and you weren't a, quote, good patient. So we had all these barriers, from the standpoint of the healthcare provider, said, okay, you know, you do a little better, show me that you deserve it, and then we'll give it to you. And this is really a game changer because we now have data, and we can talk about that later, based on clinical studies, that this improves people who are have high A1Cs, who are technology naive, who are challenging in terms of their ages, like the adolescents. All the people in these categories do much better using a system like this. So I'll stop now and let you drill down a little bit.
Awesome. Yeah. So I'm just curious, because with the meal detection, I'm curious the learning. Like, let's say someone is eating their meals at different times every day. Is it going to be able to adapt? Let's say lunch was at 2 p.m. one day. It's at noon the other day. In terms of its learning, is that going to work okay? And then my second question, with these auto corrections being able to occur up to every 5 minutes, do you have any information? I'm really curious, like, how many auto corrections people end up getting. Like, do they really get one every 5 minutes, or are there a certain percentage of time they end up needing them? I'm just so curious about that.
Yeah. So the algorithm learns, and even with 670, the settings would change every 24 hours based on the previous week. It was a rolling average of the previous week's data. And so same thing here. This learns from people's behavior. And in the end, it's not going to give too much insulin if the glucose isn't going up and you're already not at the max basal rate. So there is a lot of safety considerations, but in the end, it does learn. The second part of your question, it's really interesting that we've now, in general, with auto basal, which is every 5 minute basal, there were limits to how much auto basal you could get in a day and based on the total daily dose. So that, if you think about that, there was about 40% of the insulin delivered as auto basal. That's with 670 and 770. Now we have auto correction, which adds anywhere from another 15 to 30 or more percent of insulin that's automated. So ultimately, what we want is a system, and we're not quite there yet, but we're working on it, to be totally automated. All the insulin delivery is automated. Now, It's about, depending on the individual, it's about 50 to 70% in some cases. But the more automation, the better. And you know, I'll be very humble. I think the algorithm is a lot smarter than I am and a lot smarter than a lot of my colleagues. And one of the things we say to the users of these technologies, trust the algorithm. It is smarter than you. Now, there are a few people out there who it is, you know, they probably do know more than me and can outwit the algorithm. But for most people, the vast majority of people, it's going to do a great job if you just trust it. Does that answer your question, Diane?
No, it does. Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Great. Can we shift gears just a little bit? Because I'm very excited about targets. Talk to us about the new targets.
Yep. So the target setting, there are really two settings that are very important in this system. And this is why 780G is so much of a quantum leap from the 670 and 770. First of all, the target that you can set is the lowest in the field. It's 100 milligrams per deciliter. Now, you can do 110, you can do 120, and 120 is what 670 and 770 have. So by having a target of 110, you really can get much better mean glucose levels, and the algorithm is shooting to get down to that level, so it becomes more aggressive. The other tuning knob, if you will, is something called the active insulin time. And active insulin time is not physiologic insulin. That physiology of insulin, once you inject it, hasn't changed. It's got a typically 3 to 4 hours of active insulin. But the algorithm can be fooled into thinking it's actually less. So you can adjust that active insulin time anywhere from 2 up to 8 hours. And actually, we recommend that it be 2 hours, because in that way, the algorithm is thinking, because it's not measuring the insulin in the blood, it's using some principles of physiology to say, okay, now your insulin is only lasting 2 hours, so I can give you more insulin and do it safely. So we now, with those two settings, we're recommending that everyone start off on a target of 100 milligrams per deciliter and 2 hours active insulin time. And it turns out that we have looked at a lot of data, and I'd love to talk about that with, you know, if you're interested. I know you said you were. And love to talk about it, because we are able to look at the outcomes in terms of times and ranges with different targets and different active insulin times. And it turns out you get the best overall outcomes when you set the target at 100 milligrams per deciliter and an active insulin time of 2 hours.
So let's do that. Let's talk about that right now, because this is a perfect segue to that, right? And we all know that this product has been available, this system has been available outside the US for a number of years now. Can you talk to us a little bit about outcomes with that most aggressive setting, that 100 milligrams per deciliter and 2 hours?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really, it's kind of amazing to look back and see what our algorithm engineers using these simulators actually predicted would be the best settings and what the outcomes would be. And they predicted 2 hours and 100, and they said you would get a time in range of about 78%. And so we did a pivotal trial, and we, in the pivotal trial, and this is a few years ago now, we had to do it. The FDA asked us to do half the time in the pivotal trial with a set point of 100 and the other half with 120 as the targets, but they didn't specify what the active insulin time was. So it turns out when we went back and looked at the data, the people who were using that 2 hour setting got 79% time in range. But that was only a small study. It was 157 people, and only a fraction of those used those settings. But now we have real-world data in 61,000 people, in mostly in Europe. And, you know, when you get a population that large, a lot of things kind of wash out. There aren't these biases that of selecting the right patient to be in a study, and, you know, and the physicians coaching the patients to make sure they're doing what the protocol says. But now you get it 61,000 and people coming from all different baseline therapies, different walks of life, different socioeconomic status, and you can really, and automatic uploads through 24 hours. So we're getting really very good and reliable real-world data. So a couple of things. First of all, the real-world data really, in 61,000 people, shows that the pivotal trial in 157 was exactly right. It's almost the same. And it's uncanny how close it is. With real-world settings, we're getting time and range about 80%.
That's phenomenal.
And the other thing is, historically, we've seen that there's a disparity between the time and range that you can achieve in children versus that with time in adults. And that's been in our system, 670 and 770, it's been about 9 to 10% difference, with the children, of course, being lower. It's true with our competitors' systems. But now with this system, it has narrowed the gap. So children using the recommended settings are getting 77% time in range. So the gap has narrowed to only 3%. And that's really, I think, because, and you know, we have data to support this, that this automation has taken some of the behavioral aspects of diabetes out of the equation. And so the this auto correction with and auto basal has your back. So children are, you know, a lot more active in cases. They're trying to figure out exactly what they're going to eat and how much they're going to eat is challenging. And so these algorithms can is the great leveler of the playing field. The other thing that we saw is that we now have data really around from around the world. So not only in Europe, where this has been available for, you know, over 2 years, but also from Latin America, from India, and you know, and from Korea and so forth. So what we see is the similarities around the world are much greater than any differences in the level of achievement of time and range. And within Europe, there are, you know, 27 different countries that we've looked at the data. And again, the similarities are really amazingly obvious. And, you know, there are some differences in countries and there may be explanations. It'll be very interesting for us to try and figure this out. I'm always proud to say that the best country in Europe is Poland. They get 81% time and range, and my grandparents came from Poland, so good for the Poles that they're doing well. So, and you know, I just learned actually last night that in India, the culture encourages children to have a big, huge glass of whole milk before going to bed. And that's, you know, that's a cultural difference that this kind of system can accommodate for. So this is an interesting set of observations that we're really thrilled to see how well people are doing, not only—
That's incredible. I mean, to be over 80% in range, and that's like an average, means there's a bunch of people that are even higher than that, which is incredible. I have a question related to automated mode exits, because we know with using 670 and 770G, that was sometimes the biggest issue, is people would get exited. And then if you're not in automated mode, you're not getting the advantage of the automation. So can you talk a little bit about that and how that might be different with 780G?
Right. Well, first of all, what we see again around the world and in the real world, people are on in automation 95% of the time.
Wow. You know,
and so, wow. And the exits from automation, and we call this now smart guard. So that's the term for that we used to call auto mode. So the exits from smart guard that are required by the system turn out are less than one a week. And so it's really it reduces a lot of the burdens that people have had in using these systems. And now, you know, if I can segue to the sensor, talk about burden. We now have a sensor that doesn't require finger sticks when you're in smart guard, and it doesn't require calibration. So these are some of the things that have, I think, limited people in using these devices and our device in particular, or sticking with them. But now we again have a sensor that's very accurate, built and designed to work with this system, and it performs beautiful.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about differences of Guardian 4 versus Guardian 3? I understand it's still a 7-day sensor. And I believe we heard that one calibration just to start it, but then no calibrations through the rest. Is there the option to do like optional calibrations?
Right. So if you do a finger stick, and we tell people, we educate people to say, if your symptoms don't fit what the sensor is showing, you should do a finger stick. But when you do a finger stick, it is automatically uses a calibration point. So yes, so it. And it turns out people, again, are not doing a lot of finger sticks in our real-world data. They're doing less than one a day. I think it's 0.8 per day, which means maybe one every other day that they're doing. And, you know, it may be because of symptoms. It may be they just want to see. They don't believe how good they're doing or how well they're doing. But it's really lowered the burden of sensing. The form factor is the same, and in the future that's going to change. It's still a 7-day sensor, but that actually turns out to maybe be an advantage. And I'm always an optimist, so I look at the glass half full. And the reason it's an advantage is because we now have an infusion set that lasts 7 days. And one of the burdens of diabetes is trying to remember, you know, you change your sensor on this day and you change your infusion set, you know, 3 days or 2 days. And now you can coordinate it and you can decide when you're going to do it. And you know, it's up to 7 days for both the sensor and up to 7 days for the infusion set.
I love that idea because then someone can do it, right? Like, it's like, okay, Sunday's my morning and I get up and I change both and here I go again, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think when we look at download data, we see that people push that infusion set out a little bit and do whatever, and it might actually encourage consistency in it all, right? So can you tell us a little bit more about this 7-day infusion set? We're wildly curious.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned before coming to Medtronic and, you know, working with these brilliant people, and there's a lot of basic science that goes on in our R&D group, and one of the findings was, you know, well, one of the questions is, why don't infusion sets last longer? And we actually looked to what the root cause was. And it turns out the root cause, we believe, is that when insulin's manufactured, it's pure and there are no aggregations of the insulin molecules, but as it goes through all the transportation, it gets agitated, it's, you know, put into your reservoir, these aggregates of insulin molecules form and they become like fibrils and little fibers. And when you put fibers into your body in the subcutaneous space where the cannula is situated, it causes inflammation. And that's really what causes the loss of the infusion set, is this inflammatory response that ultimately the insulin doesn't flow into that area as well, or even not at all. So what our brilliant R&D folks is, they figured out a way to filter out some of those fibrils or those impurities, and also keep the preservative in the system, because the preservative actually keeps insulin pure. And with a combination of those new technologies that are part of this infusion set, and of course better adhesive, because if you have anything on for 7 days, you have to have a better adhesive that doesn't irritate and can be put on easily and taken off easily. This now allows us to have an infusion set that lasts up to 7 days. And we've done some pivotal trials with this new technology, and these infusion sets last at 7 days as long as, and about 80% of the time, they last 7 days. But 80% of the time is what 3-day infusion sets last at 3 days. So it's really, for a user, it's really effectively extended the ability to use an infusion set for a period of time that's over twice of what they were used to before. And it turns out that in those studies, the time in range was wasn't worse. It was actually a little bit better than it was with the 3-day sets. And the amount of insulin being used actually is overall less, because the fewer times you change your reservoir and infusion set, you save insulin because you were wasting it before. And if you think about that savings, it actually can be up to $1,000 a year of insulin at the previous prices. Now insulin prices are down, but still it's a potential cost saving, and a lot of saving in plastic waste, because you're not using and throwing away all that packaging.
That's great.
More than twice as often. Yeah. And they will actually be able to pre-order in about a week, on the 15th of May, and we hope to start shipping in early June. And wow. By the way, people who have 770 will able to do this upgrade over the air. They don't need any new hardware, and so they'll have have the first crack at getting the 780 algorithm. And whether you do this over-the-air upgrade or get a new piece of hardware, you do need a new prescription from the healthcare provider. So, because there are settings that have to be put in, and there's some education that both on the providers need to be educated, and the people who are going to use this need education, which will be delivered in ways that we've always done before, either with our pump trainers. Or there are modules that they can use depending on what their baseline therapy. There are online modules that they can use to do the education.
Oh, that was one more question I had. Yeah, so if someone's already on 770, do they need to do a formal insulin pump training, or can they do these online modules to get started?
Yeah, so on online modules.
Awesome.
That's amazing.
Oh my goodness. Well, this is so exciting. I want to thank you so much. Dr. Vigursky, I know Bob, but thank you so much for meeting with us. This is just really so exciting. Natalie and I have been waiting for this for a long time, and we're so excited now to offer it to our patients. So thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Well, it's been a pleasure, and I thank you for giving me the opportunity to let all your viewers and listeners understand more about what 780G is all about.